This is the top left corner at the Greylock Glass.
Oh my God, we have some fun stuff coming up.
This is the top left corner, episode number 77. I'm your host, Jason Velasquez, and as always, I do thank you for tuning in. And that voice that you heard just moments ago belongs to Amy Brentano, the founder and director of The Foundry in West Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And we're going to be hearing quite a bit more from her in this episode, as she is our interview subject, our victim, as it were, our guest on this episode. I know that I've been trying to sort of get in the habit of offering the highlights during the show, the highlights of conversations I have with our guests, and then saying, if you want to hear the entire thing, the entire conversation, click the link in the show notes and you can listen at your leisure. And I do that to try to fit more in to an episode, which makes, some kind of sense. But the challenge is that the people I talk to are, bar none, fascinating people. That's why they're on the show, because they have interesting things to say. And I don't like cutting things, because I'm always afraid that I'll cut the thing that I really want you to hear, and you'll listen to the show, the main episode, and you'll say, well, I'll get back to that, the bonus content, the director's cut in a bit, but I don't have time now. And in this case, with Amy Brentano, that would be a mistake, because she has such an interesting story. She's such an interesting character. She's funny, and she has a really, just hearing her story about how she came to the Berkshires, to West Stockbridge, to coming to the Foundry, to carry on a pun, to sort of, or a cliche, to sort of building it up from the forging it, I guess. Isn't that what a foundry has something to do with? Hot metal, hot liquid metal, I think. Whatever the case is, she's really, she's a hard person to find anything to edit out of a conversation. So what I did was I pretty much just cut me out as much as I possible. That pompous, ass that takes up so much of the airtime. So I cut me out and I left almost all of her stuff in. So hopefully that'll buy us enough time to fit it all in. Because we do have quite a bit of stuff on this show. We've got at least three tunes. I have it's not a new feature. I'm going back to an old feature because you asked for it. Somebody said to me, you used to, just do some general news on this show, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I used to. But nobody, when I asked people what do they want, they didn't say. Most people didn't even answer the survey. So I was like, all right, well, they don't want, sort of the news in brief. In detail, as they say on the BBC, then I'm not going to spend my time doing it. But apparently, just because people don't say that that's what they want, that doesn't mean that they don't. So we'll have some news. I just have randomly picked some interesting stuff going on that you might want to know about, some opportunities to take advantage of, and we'll fit that in too. I will say that this is getting to be a very expensive news outfit to run. I had to upgrade my server. I had to buy some new equipment. It seems like everywhere I turn, somebody's, asking for $39.95 there and $79.95 there. And advertisers, just, they're not, it's really hard. It's really, really hard to be a full-time sales rep and produce content, especially when the advertisers are saying, well, I advertise on Facebook these days. Well, Facebook is 3,000 miles away. So if you're a local business complaining that the local community doesn't support you, I can only shake my head or shake my finger. I guess I'm shaking my finger right now. If you want us to shop locally, then you need to advertise locally. That's just kind of how it works. For those of you who are not business owners, I really hope that you will consider visiting us online at greylockglass.com/memberships. And if you are not a member, shame on you. You should be, because, we have membership levels as low as a dollar per month. Well, I mean, we have a free level too, but that doesn't really help me much. But if you have a buck, an extra buck, which is less than 4 cents a day, mind you, if you have a dollar a month that you can spare, preferably $5 or $10, we could really be an ass-kicking local news outlet, and I mean that. It doesn't take a lot to make this thing absolutely chug along, but it does take something because, like I said, it is getting increasingly expensive to run. So again, greylockglass.com/memberships. Plural, and pick a level that is affordable and good for you, and that makes you feel good about supporting us, and do that today. Do that right now because I really, I've got to buy another computer eventually. This one's dying. I've got all manner of things I'd love to upgrade. So, and what does that do? That basically gives you better news. So consider doing that. If you don't like going straight through the website, which is completely secure, we use the uber secure Stripe payment gateway. But if for some reason you don't want to do that, maybe you're a big fan of patreon.com. We have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/greylockglass. If you would like to support us through the European version of Patreon, steadyhq.com. Why did I? They invited me to join up. I said, what the heck? It doesn't cost me anything really, although it's I don't get as much money as if you go through the website. But if you feel like being weird and going through SteadyHQ, by all means, steadyhq.com/greylockglass. You can support us there also. At the bottom of this of the show notes of most of our articles, also, you can just tip us. If you'd like a particular episode, just tip us a buck, $5, $10, whatever. Look for the civil boost box down at the bottom of the article and click that, and you can give us anything from a dollar on up just to tell us, hey, that was a great show or a great article. That way you don't have to commit to any long-term affair, any long-term romance with the Greylock Glass. I'm not asking for that. I'm not asking even to know your name. You can just leave in the morning. Leave the rose on the table. No, anyway, that's neither here nor there. The fact is, this is an expensive operation to run, and you can help. That said, we do have some sponsors. And one of those sponsors is the Berkshire Music Project. And we love the Berkshire Music Project because they are sort of a rolling sponsorship. They just keep sponsoring us every month, all month. They've been doing it for, gosh, a long time now. And we actually don't get to give back as much as I would like to for their support. They support us whether we're talking about their stuff or not. They bring some of the greatest music to the Berkshires. I guess they were founded in last year, 2019, and they have brought shows to North Adams. They've brought shows to the Stationery Factory in Dalton. They have brought shows. They've done some house concerts. They have. And they're bringing a show to the Foundry, and so that's how this all sort of ties in together into a nice little package, a weighty, lengthy, long-winded package, but still a package. So yes, the Berkshire Music Project is bringing Gold Casio to the Foundry, and Gold Casio is a it's such a hard to describe band. In fact, I don't have to describe it. I was gonna do a little promo spot, a little pre-roll promo for Gold Casio, but I'm not gonna do that because I don't have to. Because it just so happens that Amy Brentano, remember Amy, the director of the Foundry, she talks about the show that's coming up on Saturday, the 25th of this month, which is this Saturday. Assuming that you're listening on the week of, well, this week, look at your calendar, and if it's past January 25th, you know that I'm not talking about anything relevant anymore. I mean, I was at the time, but I'm not now. I mean, I will not have been talking about anything relevant when that time comes. The fact is, Amy Brentano, director of the Foundry, is going to tell us all about Gold Casio right now.
The Berkshire Music Project, we really want to develop a collaboration with Berkshire Music Project, and we believe in their mission to bring like really fresh new stuff here that's not showing anyplace else in the area. And so we're bringing Gold Casio up, this really cool band that just moved from out west to Brooklyn, and they are coming up on January 25th at 7:30. They are wild. Hard to describe. I can't wait to see them in person. They call it Disco Glam Dance Party, and it's very gold. They've got some great video on YouTube, and we've got stuff about them on our website, thefounderws.com. And we're just super excited to have them here. And it's that kind of like fresh new stuff that Berkshire Music Project has their finger on the pulse of that. And we're super excited to have them here and want to see like how we can collaborate with them in the future, in addition to all the other music that's coming up.
And because we would not be the Greylock Glass if we didn't sneak in some music where it does and or even does not belong, why don't we hear a tune from Gold Casio right now? I think that's really the only way that I'm going to get out of this loop, this sort of insane loop that I'm in right now. And I think that we're going to listen to right now Socialites and Singer Types from Gold Casio to sort of get you jazzed. And I hope by the end of that song, you will have clicked the link in the show notes to find out more and maybe even buy tickets. There are still some available, though I should point out that the Foundry has a maximum occupancy of 99, so you better maybe shake a tail feather. Again, the tune is Socialites and Singer Types from Gold Casio right here on the top left corner.
She can sing, she only does it for the time.
One of the great things about living in the 21st century is that you have these tools. Well, I have these tools anyway, where I can splice and dice audio and video, rearrange it into any real order I want. I promise not to do any deep fakes on you guys. That's not cool, and that's certainly not journalism, but it is kind of fun to see or hear. I mean, I've heard some really good deep fake audio too. But I think what I'm going to do right now is, even though Amy Brentano gave me the rundown of what's coming up at the Foundry at the end of our conversation, I think I'm going to let her roll with that right now because you probably, if you are at the Foundry's website, for example, listening to the show and checking out the website, you might as well know what's coming up, and that way you can sort of plan your entertainment for the next criminy, a couple of months, because it's all laid out there for you.
I feel like we just need to bring some joy to the world. I know it's corny, but I really feel that something happened. We reached out to Boxa Vine, who's got a big following in Berkshire County, a drag queen, to come and perform at the Foundry and to give a platform to develop a new show here. And so Boxa Vine did a Christmas show called Dragged Through the Holidays, and it sold out immediately. And I walked in and I watched this audience, which were families, straight couples, gay couples, people of color, like an 8-year-old kid, just beside themselves with joy at this show. Boxa invited Angel South, another local drag queen, to come and perform. And at the end of the show, people were stood up and were dancing with each other, just screaming in joy. And that was before Christmas. And so we're like, oh my God, we just like brought, who knew? Who, I mean, we knew it would be fun, but who knew? And we added a show, and it too sold out. And so we've got coming up on February 15th, right after Valentine's Day, Box is doing a new show called Drag Through Dating, which I can't imagine won't sell out as well, because I didn't even recognize, I think I knew three people in the audience. And so it brought a whole new crowd to the Foundry. And then the very next night, we did the Harlow Chamber Duo, and it was a violinist and a cellist. Hannah Cohen was the violinist, and she's got local roots here. And that sold out too with a whole different crowd. So I feel like, oh God, that means that we've got to keep providing this diverse programming through the winter because people want a place to go and see each other and enjoy different kinds of things. So we've got coming up, we've decided that February, because it's the National Heart Association National Heart Month, we're going to have National Heart at the Foundry, which will continue with our Tuesday night gatherings, and there'll be a different theme, which we're getting ready to announce this week, every Tuesday night, where you can come and there'll either be music or games or something revolving around the heart. We're trying to curate a show from visual artists locally, that they submit pieces that they feel have something to do with the heart. And it can be anywhere from taking your blood pressure to a breakup, to healing our heartbroken hearts from what's happening around the world, to anything. It serves as a metaphor to bring people together. So Box is doing Dragged Through Dating. We've got the Grand Slambovian Circus of Dreams, who are such a popular, crazy band that's been around forever. They play the Guthrie, I think, every August, and they play Falcon Crest. They're coming up on February 14th on Valentine's Day. So we'll do a big Valentine show with them. And we're going to try to program some more fun activities through February to just bring people out. And maybe we'll do, I don't know, stitch and bitch, stitch a heart onto your sweater, into your ugly Valentine's Day sweater. But that's a theme that we kind of just came up with to throw it out there. March, where it's still cold and dreary out here, we're doing the fourth annual 30 Under 30 Festival, which the last 3 years had been held at Depot 6 in West Stockbridge. And it's being curated by some young people, and we have visual artists coming to bring their work in. And then we've got a lot of programming that is happening in March around that with young artists that are under 30. And Box of Vine will be doing a show on Box of Vine's birthday on March 13th, Friday the 13th. And so we've got that on the docket, and there's a lot of more stuff happening. April, I can't announce it yet, but we've got something really cool happening in April that we're hoping we can program around to do some consciousness raising about the LGBTQ community, in particular the transgender community, that has to do with visual arts and performance. but I can't announce those artists yet because we're still solidifying that.
But you'll tell the Greylock Glass first, I'm sure.
We're going to tell you first.
Oh, I see. Sure. So sweet. I think the thing to do would be to play another Gold Casio tune. That's what I think. I know it's crazy. Should I do it? Probably not. I should probably make you just go. But I know that if you hear this next tune, which is called Last Song by Gold Casio, I know that that will be the thing that you need to push you over the edge toward that, you know, buy tickets now button. And I think that you should be on your way there anyway. So let us hear that tune. Last Song. You're on the Greylock Glass. Now I am completely in the mood to roll the rest of that interview with Amy. Now, again, I said a lot of boring stuff in between what she said, and I cut that out. So I'll just sort of condense. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of what I said and asked, and that way you'll kind of get the idea. They do this on mainstream radio all the time. Where, like, you know, they take a billion things that they, you know, sort of said, and they condense it down into, a sentence or two. But usually those are for like 30-second sound bites. It's not usually for a 45-minute interview. But, you know, what the hell? We're always pushing new boundaries. We're pushing the boundaries that we have further. Pushing boundaries. Huh, that's a good question. Are they new? Are they old? Or are we creating new boundaries? We're smashing the old boundaries and creating new ones. That's what we do here at the Greylock Glass. We create new boundaries. Oh, Lord. No, stop, Jay, stop. This is too much. Yeah, well, anyway, I'm flying without a net, as I say. I sometimes write out a lengthy, very detailed scripted, a transcript, they call it. But we're not doing that right now. We are flying, maybe even blind, not just without a net, but blind. Flying blind without a net into the sunset. But anyway, what we're saying here is we are ready to play that interview. And I think the first part of that is just me saying, hey, tell us a little bit about Amy.
Sure. I moved up to the Berkshires from New York City about 18 years ago with my husband. And at the time, we had a 3.5-year-old daughter. And all my life, I've been in theater as either a director, playwright, producer, some level of performance. Lived in New York for 25 years, moved up here, had another kid. We've got a son who's 15 now, and got involved in regional theater up here. I've worked with Wham Theater, Berkshire Theater Group, Barrington Stage Company. Also, I have all my life been in theater education, so I was jumping into some of the schools and couldn't really find, as my kids were growing up, a place that I felt like was doing exactly what I was really interested in doing, and which is wanting to provide kind of a home for and a platform for unheard voices and emerging young artists, new work that can develop in a place and then jump out of there, that included theater and spoken word and visual arts and music and dance and everything that also establishes a sense of community for the people around it. So serving the local audience, the year-round audience. So I've been looking for a piece of real estate for quite a while, and then this building came up in West Stockbridge, and it just seemed like it was right in the middle of Berkshire County in a certain way, and right off of Route 90. And the building was an old glass blowing building, and that just resonated with me. And it's right in the middle of downtown West Stockbridge, the big bustling city of West Stockbridge. And my family, we actually live in Richmond, and so I'm only 10 minutes away. And it just seemed like the right time. I'm 58 years old, and so it was do it now or just be dead. So.
Now, I met her husband, Adam, at the same time that I met Amy. And this was, oh gosh, this was, about a year ago or so. And he is wicked cool too. So if you happen to go to the Foundry and you run into him, spend some time talking to him. He's a really neat character.
Well, he actually he was born in New York. When I met him, he lived in Boston. It's the city that he really loves the most. And he had moved up to North Adams for his adolescence because his father had a mill up there. He was in the import-export business, and he kind of grew up there. He went to Drury High School, and then he went off to Northeastern in Boston, and he was studying criminal justice, and then he got into the theater, and that's how I met him. We met on Nantucket when I lived in New York and he lived in Boston, and I said, "You're going to move to the real city now." Probably going to get in trouble for saying that if you want to be with me. So he moved back to New York, which he actually hates. And we lived there for a while, and he switched careers entirely and put himself through horticulture school at Bronx Botanical Gardens and got a certificate and started his own business there. And then we moved back up here to be closer to his family and bring up our family, and he established his own business. So he has his own business, Second Nature Garden Design, and he does boutique gardening and designing and maintenance and stonework. And he's a certified Massachusetts horticulturalist. He knows a lot of Latin names for plants.
West Stockbridge is not a place that you typically run into by accident. Not really. I mean, I guess you can, but it's one of those places that is tucked away, and if it weren't for things like television and the internet, I think that they'd probably still look a lot like they did back in Norman Rockwell's time if they had no idea what else was going on in the world. It's that cute and adorable. And there's a lot to do because they do know what's going on in the world. They do know that people love good coffee, love good restaurants, good entertainment, some cool shopping, independently owned shopping destinations. If you don't know West Stockbridge, I really encourage you to hit it up. And I was interested into how exactly Amy and Adam found West Stockbridge. That sounds really romantic, to be honest. I got to tell you, meeting each other in the theater, Nantucket, which is a, that's a gorgeous, gorgeous setting. It sounds kind of like a dream come true, all the way through. This business of Stockbridge, how did you find out about about Stockbridge. Did you have any familiarity with the Berkshires before?
I only did because my husband's parents lived up in North Adams, and so we used to travel up as much as we could to visit them from New York. And so I knew about it, and we had found after 9/11, I'll be honest with you, if you ask me in 2002 why we moved up here, I would have said it had nothing to do with that. But I lost my parents in 2001, shortly after 9/11, having nothing to do with it, but it was just an oddly coincidental. And so they were on the East Coast at that time, and it kind of released me from some of my responsibilities. And having a young child, we decided we would just go for it and move up here. And I found this online, the oldest, reputedly the oldest house in Richmond, and I came up by myself to look at it and fell madly in love with it. And it seemed also very romantic. And I found that there were a lot of people who had relocated here from New York and Boston. And yeah, there was a nice mix with old timers who'd been here forever and knew a lot about the deep history of this area. So we ended up moving to Richmond. West Stockbridge is just the closest village to where we lived, and there's no commerce in Richmond for the most part. And so we would always come down here, and we fell in love with this place. And then this building became available. I didn't even know about it, except for an old colleague of mine from the theater in New York City sent it to me online and said, "Have you seen this?" I was like, "What?" So I had known it as a glassblowing building that we had come through town back in the late 90s when we were coming up to visit his parents. And that's how I kind of found out about it. So when I found out, I came in and we looked at it, and I fell in love.
So we know that Amy found the building. She found the space. But it was not a venue when she happened upon it. So it did take a little bit of doing to turn it into the place that you will enjoy when you go check out either Gold Cassie or any of the other events that she's got coming up.
So when I purchased the building, the previous owner, Ed Merritt, who had built it in 1994 and created this glassblowing studio and had a very successful business here apparently for a while, until then he evolved or morphed out of that business and leased one half of the building to a woman, Diana Felber, who had her own art gallery in here. And she turned this half into a beautiful, state-of-the-art, beautiful art visual art gallery. And the other half of the building where Ed had his glassblowing studio was now his sculpture and painting studio. So when I purchased the building, Ed stayed in for a few months while I got my feet on the ground. And we did some events in the art gallery, which, like I said, it was move-in quality. We didn't really have to do much in here. And then when Ed moved out, I think it was April 1, we went in and we had to do a lot of construction, and we had to take it down from all white to all black. So it was a black box. There were a lot of things that we had to do to bring the building up to code because we were change of use. So it would be for assembly in there because we were creating a theater. Bizarre Productions, Berkshire Fringe, had a residency here this summer, the nonprofit theater that's been around for did Fringe Festival for 10 years in the Berkshires. And having those guys in the space, Pete Wise, who's an artistic director, co-artistic director and founder of that company, is also like a sound engineer and musician, really helped to create the sound baffling in the space and advised us on the sound package that we should be purchasing. And we had a lot of other people come in that helped us with lighting. So I got a lot of advice, and it was a community event to build the space. But now it's a very flexible black box. We have more egress that we had to put in. We had to, put up the black out the windows so that we can just really have a true black box that we can do music and theater and open mic nights and anything in there that we want to do. And then the town was generous and gave us a full liquor license that we applied for. And so that really helps us maintain the operating costs of the venue. So we did a lot of things. And then upstairs, we've got a big open studio, which serves currently as a green room for any of the performers that come in. And there's a kitchen up there and a full bath. So we've got an equity cot for those actors to take naps when they need to. So it's great. And we actually, other than that, there wasn't a lot else to do. I think the biggest thing was bringing the building up to code so that legally we could have 99 and under, that's our occupancy in here, and that we could actually have what we needed to have our full liquor license and be
Right.
open year round.
One of the things I loved hearing about was the fact that Amy is not just some investor with deep pockets who's looking to make a buck, or who's making to sort of, buy something, to throw a little bit of money into it and flip it and turn it around. She has very deep and personal reasons for wanting the Foundry to be a certain kind of venue. And I think you're going to find them pretty fascinating as well.
Well, I went to the experimental theater wing at New York University when it was first developed. So I was coming from being trained as a quote theater artist, unquote, which sounds pretentious a little bit, but my interest there was in being able to develop new work and work as an ensemble to develop new work. And I was working with people like Spalding Gray, Saskia Heck. I mean, these are names that won't mean anything necessarily to people who aren't in the theater world, but in the 70s and 80s, when there was a lot of really exciting new theater coming from Europe to New York, I was in the middle of it. And even at the time, I didn't even really know what I was in the middle of until later, like Anne Bogart, Mary Overly, all these name drops. But it was just incredible to be in that environment. So I emerged from a place of playwriting and directing and ensemble work. And that's where really my interest lies. I was an artistic director with a nonprofit theater in New York City for 10 years called Red Earth Ensemble, and we produced all original new work, and some really great actors came out of that. When we closed, it wasn't because we fell apart, it was because like half of us moved to LA, some of us stayed in New York. We just evolved out of it, but people went on to have really interesting careers. And that's where my interest lies in the theater, some musical theater, but mostly theater that's original and comes out of the devising process, which is, working together to create the work all together in a kind of a more of a horizontal fashion rather than that hierarchy where you've got just the playwright and you've got the director and then you've got the lowly actors and,
So,
that
Sarah,
process really.
Sarah Katzoff was really right up your alley when you started
So
talking with
when I
her,
met
yeah.
when I met Sarah Katzoff and fell in love, I felt like I had found my artistic home in her. And though we got to be at least 20 years apart in age, I met the Bizarre Productions, Berkshire Fringe people, and I think I was invited to go do a workshop with them in Devised Theater. They were in residency down in Millbrook, creating a piece called Passage that was done 3 years ago. God, that's what happens with old age, you don't remember. But they pulled me into it, and they did a workshop production of it down there. And then when they left Bard College, Simon's Rock, where they were in residency for 10 years, and they moved up to Pittsfield, they talked me into coming back onto stage, and I had so much fun working with them, playing this crazy character in this piece called Passage. And that was it. I knew that I wanted to work with those people. So finding them in the Berkshires just I was it it inspired me to even more quickly find a space like this, because I knew that there were artists of like mine, and there were many others. It's just that I hadn't met them yet, and now I feel like part of why I wanted a physical space was to be able to invite generous artists like them into a space to create new work and hold a space for them, whether I'm artistically involved in it or not, because I know that as the owner and producer and presenting, company in this space, there's going to be a lot of administrative stuff that I'm going to be doing, but it's still artistically satisfying for me to provide a platform for others to have a space to create work like that.
I mentioned to Amy that one of my favorite, although short-lived, projects locally was Mass Live Arts, which was founded and run by Ilan Bachrach, who ran it out of the Bard College at Simon's Rock, and it was so refreshing to see performances by the likes of Radio Hole and others. And I just think that's the sort of edgy stuff that we need much more of, all the time, every day, everywhere. And I wondered, during our conversation, you'll have to take my word for it, because it's, as I said, not in the audio. You won't hear me wonder. That's why I'm wondering now. I'm wondering right now. I wonder if the Berkshires is ready for more experimental theater. Amy, what do you think?
I am not worried about that, and this is why. Because I had a one, I feel like I just kept feeling a hunger in this area this area, for the most part, for large nonprofit organizations, it is aging out. It's the delicate conversation, but myself being part of that generation that's aging out, I feel like there's a lack of places for the young people who either stay here for economic reasons because they can't get out, or they choose to come back here, that I wanted to create a space where there's a sense of community and ownership by a lot of diverse audiences. And it's a lofty goal, and I'm hoping I can achieve it with time. But I feel like people are hungry for something different. And a lot of the work that's being produced, and this is just my own very personal opinion, is work that is serving particular audiences and not necessarily a wide variety of audiences. And I want to be able to provide work that's accessible to bring diverse audiences. And that means intergenerational audiences, socioeconomic backgrounds, lots of audiences together to see the same work that people can afford and that can reach out to people and that can change people's lenses. Because I feel like we're such a country divided right now that I don't know what else to do. I'm not a marcher. I'm not a person that goes down to D.C. and holds up a sign. It just isn't. I don't feel like I'm accomplishing me personally anything by doing that, even though I believe in it. I think that's great. But for me, my husband would say, yeah, then just buy a building. But for me to invest a life savings into something and try to create a community where there are voices that can be heard that don't have another place to be heard necessarily, but there are people who want to hear them and there are people who want to speak. It seemed to serve something personally for me that I can leave and also for my kids. Like, look, you can do this. This is possible. Do I know for sure that this is going to work? No. But for instance, there is a show right here called The Tiny Pricks Project in the gallery, and a woman from British Columbia curated pieces of vintage linen fabric that are embroidered with quotes from our current president, quotes that he has either tweeted or just said out loud that are all documented. And this exhibit is documenting an era in time where we have a president who is communicating with his public in a very different way, mostly through social media. And whether you are Republican, a Democrat, a pro-Trump, an anti-Trump, this is an exhibit that's simply documenting it in a very interesting way, contrasting the vintage linen fabric of permanence with the impermanence of social media and tweeting things. This woman was amazing, and through a personal contact, we got her to bring the exhibit here. Came up from New York City and down from Portland, Maine. It has been in San Francisco, and now it's all over the place. But we felt really lucky to have it. And somebody said to me, we got a few underwriters. This is a for-profit business here, purposely, which I haven't spoken to yet, but I'm not running on a nonprofit format. It's not a 501c3, but people did give money to underwrite bringing this here. But one of the people that I spoke to about donating said, you're going to get pushback for this exhibit. And I said, really? From who? And they said, oh, well, from your board of directors. I said, well, I don't have one. I don't have anybody. But I said, but I welcome pushback. I want to create dialogue. And so if somebody who I am assuming most people, we live in a pretty liberal bubble here, but I recognize that there are a lot of people of different point of views who also live in the Berkshires. And I don't know if they would choose to come in. I welcome them to come in and have dialogue about this exhibit.
Even the liberal bubble, it's a polite liberal bubble.
And it is a polite.
It's not always that liberal bubble that really wants a lot of controversy. So I applaud you. There's just not enough embroidery floss in the world to keep up with the quotes that come out of that man's mouth. So they're being stitched into this fabric, right? Is that what they are?
Yes, they're embroidered. On Tuesday nights we have a very incredible community gathering called Stitch and Bitch, where
Tell me about that.
So the local catering company in West Stockbridge, Soma, had purchased a food truck last year, and they're being wildly successful driving around to breweries and Balderdash in the new winery that's in Richmond. And we spoke to them and we're collaborating with them because they're right up the street, and they park on the premises every Tuesday night this winter, and our full liquor bar is open, and the foundry has provided all the materials like the embroider hoops and the thread and the vintage linen fabric that's been donated, and people come in and they get their dinner and they buy a glass of wine or a seltzer, And we have a lovely woman that is from the Berkshires who's a craftsperson who comes in and teaches people who don't know how to embroider. And people are stitching. And we've got the whole set of... And bitching, I guess. I mean, it's really fun. And sometimes we have live music. We always have something playing. And contributing to the exhibit, and their pieces are hanging on one wall for the community pieces. And they will go, they'll be cataloged by the curator, and they will travel with this exhibit, which in my heart, I feel like is going to end up somewhere large. She's got over 2,070 pieces to date. And so I think her name is Diana Waymar, the curator. And I, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up someplace large, because it's a catalog of this this era that we're in.
Many people ask me, actually they don't usually ask me, they just sort of tell me that this is what I should do. I get a lot of people telling me what I should do these days. I'm not sure exactly what it is that people think gives them license to tell me how I should run the Greylock Glass, but it seems like every week there's somebody else telling me what I need to be doing. You need to this, you need to that, you should this. You know what you ought to do? Do you get that? Do you get that in your life, in your business, or just your life? From friends, family, strangers even? Sometimes strangers. Those are the ones that really, really? You don't know me? And yeah. Anyway. Where am I going with this? Many of the things that I hear coming out of the mouths of people who know what I should be doing with the Greylock Glass are, you know, you should consider doing this as a nonprofit organization. And that's a conversation for another day, or maybe never a day, because it's just, I don't see that happening. I don't see that on the horizon, and there are a lot of reasons for that. And so I was really interested to find out that the Foundry is not being run as a nonprofit arts organization either, which is really, really different, because here in the Berkshires, as you know, you can't throw a stone without hitting either a nonprofit organization or somebody who's on the board of a nonprofit arts organization. And so I asked, why? Why not a nonprofit arts organization?
So exactly that, actually, that having worked in nonprofit almost all my life, and knowing up here, we're a small community, and the demographics, like I feel like the same people are being asked for money over and over and over again. And there's some pretty large institutions that are, you know, getting a lot of that funding. So I didn't want to compete with that, one. Two, I don't want to be a large institution. I guess my focus being community, I felt like and then me being an individual investor at this point, that putting my savings into this, I didn't feel like it was going to be sustainable. Like the commercial mortgage wasn't going to be sustainable if I was going out and trying to do fundraising and writing grants and things that I've done. Like, again, I can do that and I've done it all my life. But looking at how the nonprofit world is struggling and how the tax laws have changed for donations,
right?
Just trying to look at the whole piece of it, coming into this little town and seeing what looking at what Six Depot, for instance, the coffee shop here that Lisa and Flavio have created, and what they've done with their marketing, and how they created a place where community feels like they can just go in there and it's their home. You can go in there and work. You can go in there and have a meeting. People come not just from West Stockbridge, from all over Berkshire County to go to Six Depot, and he's roasting his own coffee in there. And I looked at that and I thought, maybe I can do this. If I can figure out a way to collaborate with local merchants and I can get a liquor license to serve people that want to do that when they come in. Like, there's nothing like sitting down, having a glass of wine with somebody else and watching something or listening to a lecture. That I just thought, I can do this on a smaller scale. Maybe I can make it, at least get in the black. You know, I don't see my personal self making a huge profit on this, but we're in a certain place in our lives where we can kind of survive without me having to bring in zillions of dollars of income on my own. So, you know, needless to say, I don't know when I'm ever going to be able to pay myself, but that's not why I did it. I did it because I felt that there was a need for this sense of community and a small place. And also, when I first moved up here, Helsinki and Great Barrington was still there. And I know, like, the Helsinki and Hudson is beautiful, and I love going there. It's not the Helsinki and Great Barrington. That small, intimate space, I saw some of the most amazing people perform. But what I left there with was that I met new people who were smashed up against me at a table that I didn't know, and we bought each other drinks, and I made relationships there. And I felt a sense of community in this tiny little space, and I wanted to recreate that. So it's jumping off a ledge for me. I had a business plan. I talked Pittsfield Cooperative Bank, who gave me my commercial mortgage, into believing in my business plan. So they gave, you know, I went with a local bank, and then I had to create another business, which is my operating business, which rents from my business that owns the building. And you know, it seems sustainable. The biggest challenge is all the liability insurance. But with all of the different programming that we're trying to run through here, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that the way that it's picking up and the way that it's starting to sell out means to me that people wanted it. And people are coming down from Pittsfield, and people who are coming up from Egremont. And I guess I just thought in my own weird business mind that I could make this work. And that if I really tried to go nonprofit, that I wouldn't be able to do it, that it would be as so many nonprofit organizations haven't been able to make it, especially smaller ones that are competing with these large institutions up here. So
if you want to experience the Foundry for yourself, but you want to do it from the other side of that fourth wall, you want to be the entertainment, there is an opportunity for you. In fact, all month long, there have been, and there will continue to be, open mics going on at the Foundry. They will be listed in the show notes as well, the link to them anyway. And I think that that is one of the coolest things. There are not enough venues for them. And I think the more venues there are, the more people will, you know, sort of get over that anxiety of making a complete ass out of themselves, which we have to do from time to time. It's very important to make an ass out of oneself regularly. I feel that if you don't do that, you're taking everything, including yourself, much, much too seriously.
We've been doing our open mics for a while, and it's, you know, it's slow building because there's a lot of open mic down in South County, which is awesome. But our open mics are really not just music. We have welcomed everything, and people are definitely coming doing poetry, storytelling, tap dancing, crazy improv, definitely music. We've got young people. We have a crew of people come down from Pittsfield High School who are some of the most talented singers that I've heard in a long time. Comedy, and we had some stand-up from a local gal who lives in West Stockbridge. Hilarious. It's casual, but you get to come in and plug into our awesome sound system, you know, and stand in front of a really nice little lighting package and be on stage and try new stuff out. And it's a non-judgmental, really fun. And the bar's open, of course.
And the bar's open. Maybe I should do a live podcast there. That could be fun.
That would be really fun.
That could be fun. Everybody's doing it these days. Yeah.
Everyone's doing it. It should be fun. I mean, it's a place to go and hang out, and you don't have to feel pressure. And often people will come and they didn't plan on doing something, but then they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to get up and tell this story. Or one guy got up and read from his phone the speech he wrote for his daughter's rehearsal dinner. And we all were like, wait a minute, what? And then it ended up just being incredible. So you never know what's going to happen. And some nights there are like five or six of us, and some nights there's 20 people. But I think we're just going to keep doing it until we decide maybe we should be reframing it. But it's just fun. It's fun to open up, and lots of local people will just stroll in for that one. But sometimes people come from afar to try new stuff that they're working on in a safe place.
I think that's about it for this show. Oh, no, that's not true either. I was looking at my steady drip, drip, drip of stuff that comes into my inbox. And I see that there's one more piece of news that I was waiting on all day, and now it's here. Now I have it. It just showed up. It's also from the Berkshire Music Project, which I was kind of waiting for because I was going to talk about it on the Cornbread Cafe. But since I'm staring at it right now, I have the good fortune to tell you that the very talented Sierra Farrell, whom I hope you got a chance to catch at the Stationery in Dalton at the end of last year, I guess sort of the early fall of last year, maybe. Sierra Farrell is going to be at Mr. Fenn's on April 3rd. She returns to the Berkshires with special guest Wes Buckley, whom we have interviewed on this show, and I'll provide a link to that as well, that interview. That was a fairly recent interview. Doors open at 6:30. Show will start at 7:30. And I believe, if you just give me just a second here, I believe I have a Sierra Farrell tune that I could play for you. I believe I could play for you to get you interested. If you haven't heard it before, you're going to be really jazzed about seeing her for the first time. And if you have heard of her and seen her, you're probably already looking for tickets, and they are available as of right now. But I'm going to play for you, I have found it, Sierra Farrell, The Sea, right here on the top left corner. And Sierra will take us home for this episode. Until next time, stay safe, be good to each other, and go easy on yourself. Thank you.